Big news! This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which flight deals are actually deals and which are clickbait. They'll also tell you when to skip the bundle and book separately. Plus, how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Frommer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Frommer. And today is a very personal show for me because my guest is my gorgeous, brilliant, strong, courageous, fabulous...
Stop.
...daughter, Veronica, who did not engage in the Tour de France, which is going on right now. She'd have to be
true.
Male and a cyclist for that. She just returned from doing the...
Tour de Mont Blanc.
Tell our listeners, what is the Tour de Mont Blanc?
So the Tour du Mont Blanc is a backpacking circuit that goes for just over 100 miles. You circumnavigate the Tour du Mont Blanc range, which is the highest mountain in Western Europe, the Mont Blanc mountain, and the range of glacial peaks around it. So it's this really, really beautiful hike, kind of in the foothills and the passes around these really, really tall glacial mountains.
And it goes to three different countries, right?
Yes, it goes through Switzerland, France, and Italy. And one of the amazing things about it is you can stay in these huts pretty much littered the whole way through. And if you've ever hiked in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, the huts there were actually modeled after the huts around the Tour du Mont Blanc. So you can, you know, get a bed for the night, get some dinner. They pack you a lunch the next day if you want it. So you can travel pretty light. And it was a really wonderful experience.
But you didn't necessarily travel light. I mean, I saw photos of you and you had a massive backpack on your back because you were camping out on some nights. You weren't only in the huts, right?
True. I will say one of the great things about this trip is that it's a modular experience. You can kind of take and leave certain parts of it. I come from a guiding background, so I was a canoe tripping guide for many years. I have a lot of backpacking and some mountaineering experience. So I was excited to spend a couple nights in a tent, and I kind of convinced my hiking partner, Fran, to do that with me. But we split our time, so you can travel pretty light. You know, you can do it with no food on your back, no tent, just staying in the refuges every night. We did it in a kind of silly way where we both carried the tent and were staying in huts for half the time.
How did you both carry the tent? You had it in one hand each?
Oh, no. We didn't just camp is what I mean.
Oh.
So on the nights where we were staying at the huts, it felt kind of silly that we were carrying the camping equipment.
I see. And you would switch off who carried the camping equipment.
Well, I have a lightweight tent, so we separate it. I carry the poles and Fran carries the body of the tent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because if this was a visual medium podcasting, which I know some podcasts are videos too, you would see that Veronica is maybe 5'3".
I am solidly 5'3".
Solidly 5'3".
Thank you very much.
And looks like a strong wind could blow her away. So how much did you have to carry on your back?
So for this hike, we were carrying about 10 kilograms each, which is like 22 pounds, which is not, you know.
So that's a fifth of your weight?
Yeah, just about. and again, you know, if we had opted to just do the huts, it would have been a little less. So I was carrying a 35 to 40 liter backpack. But to put that in context, you know, I've done trips with a 75 liter pack where I'm carrying a week's worth of food. Right. I've done trips with like an 100 liter pack when I was mountaineering that has gear in it for climbing and food and tent.
You carried 100 pounds on your back?
No, no, no. 100 liters of space.
Oh, to goodness. Fit. Okay.
But I mean, that's double the volume.
Okay.
You know, of backpack I was carrying here. So it's all relative.
It's all relative.
I would say though, the reason I'm pushing back is because I actually think this experience is quite accessible.
Okay. Good to know.
If you're able-bodied and able to go on a hike.
So you decided to do half of the time camping out. Could you have stayed in huts the whole time through, or does that require reserving well in advance and that didn't happen?
So you absolutely can stay in huts the whole time through. A lot of them do book out months in advance. So I'd suggest booking ahead, especially if you're more of a type A traveler and planner. I think book the huts ahead. Something that I feel from my guide background is that you never quite know how tired you're going to be on a certain day or where you'll end up. So I liked the flexibility of the tent. And I will say, I read a lot of blogs of people who would just get in early. And I think they reserve a certain amount of slots every night for travelers who didn't book. So things are flexible when it comes down to it.
Okay. So we're going pretty deep into the logistics. Let's also go into the reason you do this. Was it a cultural experience? I mean, you got to go to three different countries. Did you feel the difference in each one? Or was it more about the nature? And these, I mean, the photos were just spectacular. I mean, they could have been used as backgrounds for The Sound of Music. It was that kind of majestic peaks that you were just marching through.
It was pretty breathtaking. Like I it was up there with the most beautiful scenes I've ever encountered, honestly. It was like so amazing to just behold the mightiness of these mountains. I'm also a musician and we live in New York City.
And the song you hear at the end of the show is Veronica singing.
Thank you, Mom.
She is the lead singer for a band called Melt. They're constantly on tour. So besides being a camp guide and also an avid hiker, she's also always on the road, right?
True. So. And there's a lot of adventure that comes along with that, but ultimately, I'm sitting in a van for 6 hours a day.
Right.
My lower back hurts. I'm asleep. I really crave experiences that bring me outside and allow me to move my body. And I think living in New York City, too, which is a city I love, it's nice to kind of calm down the brain and get some fresh air. So a big part of it is disconnecting from screens. And for me, there is a lot of clarity, creative clarity and release that comes with moving my body in the outdoors. I feel that it's like a way to kind of reconnect with my primal nature as a beast. It leads me to good places creatively. So I seek those experiences out. But I will say it was both. It was both a cultural experience and an outdoor experience. Not so much changed across country lines except for, you know, ciao instead of bonjour. But the cappuccinos were better in Italy at the huts. That was a highlight. You could do this harrowing climb and then you reach the top and there's just a hut with like a cappuccino and a panini for you.
Why was it harrowing?
The elevation. I mean, we were climbing 4,000 to 6,000 feet of elevation a day.
Wow.
We also shortened the timeline of the trip, so it doesn't need to be that intense.
Okay. Well, you didn't shorten it as much as there are people. This is the craziest thing. And for those who listen to this podcast, you may remember I had the wonderful gentleman on who wrote a book about races and different races that you can create vacations around. And this was one he discussed. People take this 100-mile hike to three different countries, and they do it in, I think, 48 hours?
the record, I think, is 20 hours.
20 hours.
Which blows my mind. We were hiking. Fran and I started out this trip saying, you know, we don't really want to do much more than 12 to 15 miles a day, which is a lot of mileage.
Especially if you're going up,
yeah,
right?
Up and down.
Up and
the
down.
The downs, really. We were feeling our elderly knees on those descents at the ripe age of 26.
Yeah, elderly knees.
Truly, though. I have two torn meniscuses, so they've lived longer lives than they should have. But it's wild that people do that as an ultra marathon.
Oh, my goodness.
It's incredible. And I want to see it. I want to watch the coverage.
Well, people in Europe watch it. It's on like 24 hours a day so that people can watch these competitors. And you have to climb ladders. You have to scramble over rocks.
It's constant up and down. The flat moments were glorious, but few and far between. Huh. It was constant up or down. And it was really taxing. Fran and I are in really good shape. And again, we pushed it. Most people do this in 9 to 11 days. We were hiking for like 7.5 days. But it's pretty remarkable that people run that. We were reading a book of accounts of ultramarathoners who have done it.
Huh.
Sounds like you get into a pretty kooky
headspace.
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like from some of your posts that you were in a pretty kooky state.
That's true.
At times.
We actually fell deathly ill. We had 3 days. We started off on our first day. It was supposed to be an 11-mile day, but we kept hearing that you could take this variant that would make it a 15-mile day with much more elevation, but that it was just one of the best parts of the trip. So we decided to do it. And it ended up, I think, being a 17-mile day. And it was gorgeous, but we were unprepared. So we did this 17-mile day, then we did an 11-mile, then a 14, and then we had a rest day. And then we had our big 21-mile day.
Ooh.
And we woke up the next morning with like full body chills and a fever.
Oh, my goodness.
So we paid the price. I think it was one of us caught a bug on the flight.
And okay.
I think
so.
Yeah.
It wasn't the hiking that would give you a fever.
I think the exhaustion probably didn't help our immune systems.
Uh-huh.
But no. It wouldn't have been that.
Sure.
But yeah, get it. We finally had a comeback, but we were trudging along during the sickness.
So you're trudging along. What are you seeing? You're seeing, obviously, these alpine peaks. How often were you in towns, and what were those like?
I would say each stage, the TMB is split up into stages, which I think—
Tour Mont Blanc.
Yes. Comes from the ultramarathon, stages of the marathon. And each stage begins and ends in a town. So you're always going to have access to a pharmacy, a grocery store throughout the day. But you're seeing cows just living their happy life among the glaciers. You're seeing gorgeous wildflowers. It's unreal. It's like these ragged peaks, totally pointy. And it's a newer mountain range, so they're not rounded out. So they're very dramatic. Triangular peaks.
Oh, interesting.
And
a newer mountain range. So
I mean, in the history
millions,
of the world.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to billions of years ago or what?
I wouldn't quote me on the exact timeline. but yeah, it's contrasted by these fields of wildflowers. Mm. We saw some ibex, which are kind of like shaggy deer with very curvy horns. We were seeing a bunch of mammoth, which are these little creatures that kind of run around like groundhogs.
Huh.
Oh my God. And you're walking along these thundering glacial streams. And one of my biggest points of agony on this trip was that it was so hot out and all I wanted to do was jump in the water, but they're coming straight from the mountains. So it's massive water that you couldn't possibly swim in.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was a bit of a tease, but very beautiful.
And the towns you would be in.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there must have felt like there was a difference between the French and German and Italian towns. Not German, Swiss towns. I mean, chocolate. Did you do chocolate every day?
In Switzerland? There was chocolate everywhere for sure. I would say the differences were not as dramatic as I thought, because I think it's like the difference between living in a mountain town in New Hampshire or a mountain town in North Carolina or Quebec versus living in like Montreal or New York, you know, where you might actually share more in common with a city goer. Like all of these people are living in a very mountainous rural setting.
Right.
So that, yeah, the cuisines differed a bit. We stayed in one Airbnb. We treated ourselves one night in the town of Trion. And our Airbnb host was going to cook us dinner. And she cooked us cheese pie. This was in Switzerland. It was a pie made of entirely cheese.
Holy moly.
We couldn't finish it. And we were so beside ourselves because we didn't want to offend
her.
Was
it tasty?
The first couple bites were pretty good.
And then it got,
we got a little sick of the cheese and cured meats, I would say. But even that was consistent between Italy, France, and Switzerland. Yeah, there was a bit of a different air about each country.
So you couldn't finish the cheese. Were you in front of her or?
No. And our biggest secret is that we wrapped up a little bit of the remaining cheese pie and threw it away, and we buried it. We tried to hide it.
Oh.
And we hope that if she finds it, she chuckles.
Yeah. Well. So you stayed in huts, you stayed in Airbnbs, you went through these little towns. Did you meet other tourists? And lately, whenever I've been asked to be on TV a lot. In fact, if you want to see me, I was just on the Kelly and Mark show this week talking about last minute summer discounts, how to have an affordable last minute summer trip. Thank you, honey. It was a really fun segment, but it was much more fun than what I've been doing recently for Inside Edition, which has all been segments about how to pretend you're not an American when you travel, because there's this feeling, and it's based in reality, that there's a lot of anti-touristic sentiment in places like Barcelona or in Venice and other places that are just inundated with tourists.
Right.
Did you feel comfortable as an American traveler?
Absolutely. I would say, first of all, this route is so popular that the towns are built around it.
Huh.
The towns are, you know, every time we stayed in one B&B and one Airbnb, and both of our hosts in those places said all of their guests are doing the TMB. So it's mostly, it's a tourism hub.
Right.
But
Barcelona and Venice are tourism hubs,
but they
feel like it's destroying their lives.
Well, you also, I think, share this sense of appreciation for the place. You're all in, you know, doing a kind of hard thing to witness something beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were there the day that the U.S. bombed Iran.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot of heaviness for us around our role globally
and
our
nervous.
Social context.
Yeah. Was a war just, about to start?
Yeah, totally. And also just a heaviness around, being aggressors, feeling like we were playing this aggressive, anti-human role in the world. And what I would say is people were sympathetic and interested. They wanted to know how we felt about things. They wanted to know what it was like.
Yeah. You studied French.
Mm-hmm.
Did Fran speak another language?
Fran speaks Spanish. So it comes in handy with the Italian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you mostly speak French, or what? How did you get along in this area?
I spoke a lot of French and it was great.
Très bien.
Merci. But a lot of our fellow travelers didn't.
Huh.
So we met Australians, fellow Americans, French people. A lot of French people are hiking the TMB. I think it's a great treat.
So make an effort. I know people who have walked the Camino de Santiago in Spain.
Mm.
And what I get from them is the real reason you do that is to have this fellowship with other people walking it, that it's an incredibly social experience. Did you find that on the tour Mont Blanc?
Yeah, I did. And it's part of the reason we chose to stay in huts. Although if I were to go back and do it again, I'd camp more often because the campsites were just as full of camaraderie and other interesting people to talk with. And they were so beautiful and free. So it's really cheap vacation.
Huh.
And even staying in huts, I think I spent about $300 total on my lodging.
For this whole week. Wow. That's very good.
But yes, we met a lot of people and we had set a goal. We wanted to make some friends and we wanted to hike with some friends. And we ended up accomplishing our goal a couple times.
Were they all in their 20s or were people of different ages?
The people we gravitated towards were also in their 20s, but I was so struck by the age diversity on the trail. There were people in their 60s, 50s, even older. There were young parents with kids in backpacks.
Wow.
It was really cool. And I think, yeah, the trail is so adaptable. You can really take it at your own pace.
Interesting. Okay. So who did you meet? Tell us about some of the friendships you made.
So the first people we met were we met a lot of Australians. They get a lot of time off.
Yeah,
they're always traveling.
Lucky Australians. Yeah.
We met two Australian med students and my hiking partner and friend Francesca is an EMT. So we had a great discussion about the differences in the medical systems between the two countries. My little sister is applying to med school. So
yes, right now.
We talked about that. We also met Steven, a 24-year-old who works at Google, which is a couple blocks away from my apartment.
I pass it
every single day. And he's a transplant from San Francisco. So it was fun to talk to him about the city and how it's changing, the mayoral election. We also met Ben, another Australian, who is an engineer on renewable energy sites and works in spurts of 3 or more weeks and then gets a bunch of time off.
Wow.
So he was, you know, telling us about his travels and what he does with that time off. And also the hut owners, you know, there was a lovely older French woman who'd been tending that she just lives in this hut, like deep in the mountains.
Does she have a private room?
Yeah, she has a private room. Her partner is the chef.
And when you stay in the huts, is it like a hostel? Are you in a room with lots of beds?
Most of the time we were. And at a lot of huts, you can get your own room.
Is it men and women in the same rooms? Or
We stayed in mixed dorms with all genders. But we were also traveling with a group of hijabi hikers. And I heard them talking at one hut about wanting to have, you know, single sex bedrooms and they were very accommodating.
Uh-huh. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So would you do this type of trip again? And where do you think you would go? Would you do a long walk or would you rather bike somewhere or do something or climb or do something else next?
I would totally do something like this again. And I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to my time outside. I was spoiled with very remote, very long canoe trips for a lot of my life. And I kind of looked down on the idea of passing through a town every night and having my cell phone. And that wasn't the type of outdoor experience I was seeking. But one of the highlights was just the friendship time with Fran.
Yeah.
We just spent
well, you
hours.
Got along, so that's
well,
great.
Got, right. I mean, I
Which
was blessed
helps.
With a good travel partner.
Yes.
I mean, that's the biggest thing, really.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, for hours and hours, we would just hike and talk. And I would totally do something like this again. And I think it's a beautiful way to see a place. I'd love to bike down Japan, which I think is a very – I have a friend who did that, very biking-friendly country. I'd love to do the Camino de Santiago. I'd love to hike in Iceland and do some saunas and cold plunges.
Oh.
I think it's a very – I think that you're primed for camaraderie when you take on the role of a bit of a dirtbag.
Dirtbag has negative connotations.
Really? Not for me.
It means that you're not a nice person. It
no
means
way.
You treat people badly.
Okay. I think that – the outdoors community has reclaimed that term.
Oh.
For me, I think it means like you're just kind of, you have a backpack on your back and you're doing it as cheap as possible.
Okay.
So that's what I mean when I say that. But I guess to rephrase, I think a lot of doors open when you go somewhere, yeah, with ready to get dirty, I guess. Ready to like get your hands dirty,
right?
Walk from place to place, bike from place to place. People take care of you in a really beautiful way.
Well, very quickly, when Veronica was graduated from high school, she decided to take a gap year. And part of that year, she went to Japan. And I didn't know this till afterwards. She hitchhiked everywhere.
That's true.
And people really took care of you there. I mean, you met people who then offered you places to stay. And you stayed with people in their homes. And they toured you all around. Because
yeah, I think. And also, you know, I'm a small white girl. So I think there's like a cultural advantage, honestly, to the privilege of like being able to be taken care of like that by a lot of different types of people.
Well, and you were on crutches for part of it because you got injured.
I wasn't on crutches, but I had a big knee brace. Yeah, I had injured my knee. But that said, I've also met a lot of men who are traveling solo and have also experienced a lot of kindness. And I think when you open yourself up to having an experience like that and you're able to give something back, whether it's a good conversation or a token of your appreciation, good doors open.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We will finish on that happy note, but I gotta, you know, since you're here, Veronica's band is called Melt.
True.
And they're going to be playing all over the United States and beyond in the coming months. Tell us a couple of the places you're playing, and they're going to be opening for My Morning Jacket for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, tomorrow I fly to Alaska for my first time ever, which I'm so stoked about. That will be one of the rare cases where we actually get extra time to explore, so I'm excited. And then we are doing this West Coast tour with My Morning Jacket, which will take us to places like the Greek Theater in Berkeley and Red Rocks in Colorado, which is this incredible outdoor venue that has always been a bucket list venue for us. So yeah, I'm excited for that tour. I think it's very suited to my interests to be out west playing outdoor venues and feeling very lucky that
it's going to be amazing. And on I think it's July 25th, they're playing Bridgeport, Connecticut.
True.
And I will probably be there. So you can meet both of us. All right. That is it for this week's show. I thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, may I wish you a hearty bon voyage.
You are Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.